And it's time for us to move to our next presenter. Is Kelly here?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, Kelly. I remember talking to you last year.
Hi.
And also, thank you very much for presenting for the California Library Users recently, Kelly. The fabulous presentation about self-publishing and how you go about that. So let me introduce you and then we'll get going. Kelly Brakenhoff writes the Cassandra Sato mystery series that includes three books and two short stories. Her children's picture books, Nevermind, Farts Make Noise, and her newest, see if I can get this right, My Dog, Koa,
Awesome, that was perfect.
featured Duke, the deaf dog, and are illustrated by her sister, Teresa Murray. These books have quickly become popular with children, parents, and educators for promoting inclusive conversations about children who are deaf or hard of hearing. Kelly is an American Sign Language interpreter whose motivation to learn ASL began in high school when she wanted to converse with some of her deaf friends. Kelly and her husband live with their hunting dog in Nebraska. Kelly, welcome back. So now all you boys and girls and all the genders in between, pull up your chairs in a circle, and Kelly is going to read to us about Duke the Deaf Dog.
Thank you so much, Linda. That was awesome. And I know I volunteered to read my book, but I have to say, I've been listening to the last 15 minutes or so of Susan's presentation, and I wish I had signed on earlier because it was so fascinating. And you guys asked great questions, and you got me super excited about a few things. So, if you don't mind, before I start reading, I just wanted to, I guess, just say a couple things about I love the idea of an anthology from CCB. I think that is so cool. And it kind of fits with last year when I spoke to everyone, I talked about how the world needs your story. And you all do have a lot of writers in your midst, and some of you are further along down the path than others. And an anthology is a great way for a person to get their foot in the door with being a published author for the first time. It's good because you can write a shorter piece and get it included. And then also the promotional opportunities. I'm self-published, and so I have to wear all the hats. I have to wear the marketing, accounting, editing, you name it, make graphics, like all the stuff. I have to do all the stuff. So if you have a group of people in an anthology, they can all promote it together, and your reach of people that you know and people who want to support you is larger. And so an anthology is a great idea. I just love it. I absolutely love it. Another thing that Susan had mentioned was releasing chapters at a time. If you have a work in progress and it's been edited, or you've had like other people read it so that you know that the quality of it is good. There's a self-publishing platform called Kindle Vella, Vella, and it's a serial platform. So it's associated with Amazon, and their publishing arm is called Kindle Direct, so KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing. And they have a thing called Kindle Vella, and you can release a chapter at a time. So if you have, a 20 chapter story, you could do it for 20 weeks. You decide how frequently you want to publish it, and then you get supporters, and it people you know, like it and support it, and they pay a fee to belong to Kindle Vella, and then you get part of that fee based on how many people read your story. So it's kind of a really low risk way to get your work out there if you have work that you want to share with people. And the people who are, you know, interested in what you're writing are there, and they'll read it. You know what I mean? So sometimes the barrier to publishing seems really large, that you have to have an agent and a publisher and an editor and all these people approve it. But really, that's not always the case. If you have a story that you want to share, sometimes even on a smaller scale like Kindle Vella, you can get your book out there or your chapters out there. So that's another option. And then the question about the conferences is a really good question. And I loved Susan's answer, because I have been to the Nebraska Writers Guild. We have a local state conference every year, but I think we actually open it up to people from outside of Nebraska. And it has really, I don't know, I think really good speakers. And as a writer, it's so fun to be with your people. Like I said, just listening to the end of Susan's talk, it's like, it resonated so much with me, because we're all just like writing geeks and reading geeks. And it's so fun to listen to other people. We all just get nerded out together. And so being at a conference is really exciting, because you're with all these people who are like your people. So I've been to the Nebraska Writers Guild, and I've been to one, a big mystery, because I write mysteries, right? So I've been to a really big mystery convention called VoucherCon. And it's this summer, I believe it's in Minneapolis. It travels each year. But because of the pandemic, they have started doing, the last 2 years were online. And I think some of it, they're starting to do hybrid. So when I went, it was in Dallas, and it was in person, and she is right, it was overwhelming. There's like 6,000 people who go, and they're all avid readers, and about, I think 1,200, maybe 2,000 of them are writers, but all the rest are readers who love to read mysteries and crime fiction. And it was so fun to go to the panels and to listen to like famous authors. I mean, James Patterson was there. I could name all kinds of people. It was wonderful. So if you get the chance to do something like that, it's really fun, but yeah, it is kind of overwhelming. And I can see how, being with a sighted person or going with some friends so that you have, I guess people to talk to afterwards and people to meet up with for meals and, you know, that kind of thing, and helping you get around. I think that is good, because it's kind of overwhelming. There are a lot of people there, but if you get the chance to go to a conference, actually every year there's a conference called Left Coast Crime. And gosh, I'm not, you know, I'm from Nebraska, so I don't know California geography super well. I can't remember what town, I'm sure one of you will tell me what town Left Coast Crime is in, but they just had it like a couple weeks ago. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to have it still. But it's cool because it's in California, and it's another mystery writers convention and mystery readers who like to read mysteries. So if you live in the area, you should check out Left Coast Crime, because that's a smaller convention. VoucherCon is by far the largest crime fiction convention. If you like to read mysteries or crime fiction, you should check out Left Coast Crime. Okay. Sorry, I digressed from my original topic for the day. Okay, now you can pull up your chair and sit crisscross applesauce on the floor, because we're going to do story time. So if you were at the library users meeting last year, I read my first Duke the Deaf Dog book, which was called Nevermind. And then Sarah, thank you for asking me back today. Sarah asked me to read the second book, which is a favorite of five-year-old boys and girls everywhere. It's called Farts Make Noise. The reason I wrote Duke the Deaf Dog ASL books is because I've been an ASL interpreter for more than 30 years. And I've seen firsthand that there just aren't enough books for young children that have deaf characters. I really, really believe that every child should learn a little ASL so they can include their deaf classmates and friends in conversations. Let's Make Noise is geared for children ages 3 to 9, and throughout the pages of the story are a deaf college professor, are photos of a deaf college professor named Amy Willman teaching children how to make some basic ASL signs. The main character's name is Duke, and he's a deaf dog. He's an orange English Spaniel, and he wears a small hearing aid over one of his ears. Everyone in Duke's family can hear except him. And as you can imagine, that can be a big challenge for him. The idea for Farts Make Noise came from a funny thing that happened between two of my coworkers. One is hearing and the other one is deaf. So my hearing coworker had a virus, and this was long before COVID, but she lost her sense of smell for several years. One day, my coworkers were sitting next to each other talking, and my deaf coworker is a really funny guy who loves to crack jokes. And he signed, "Haha, I just farted, but you can't smell, so you don't know that I farted." And my other coworker told him, "No, I didn't smell anything, but I could hear it." They both laughed so hard because he didn't realize his fart was loud enough to hear. And that is what kind of gave me the idea for this story, because, you know, kids that are deaf need to learn things that are polite and things that are not polite. So even if you can't hear the noise, you have to be aware that you're making noise. So that's what this book is about. Now, today is my first time reading this with the audio description, so I hope you enjoy hearing Farts Make Noise that I wrote and my sister Teresa Murray illustrated. So I'm sharing my screen right now, and if that helps you to see the photos or the illustrations, then great. And otherwise, I'm going to describe them so you're good to go. First thing, I want to read the dedication because I think you're going to get a kick out of it too. I dedicated the book to Dave and our children. We have four, Joe, John, Kate, and James, and we have two of them that are married, so Claire and Colton. Before you all came along, I would never have considered placing the word farts on a book cover. So let me describe the cover. Duke is an orange English Spaniel. He's standing sideways on a patch of grass on his two hind legs. He's looking over his right shoulder and his eyebrows are raised a little. On his left ear is a blue hearing aid. Also in the grass area at the bottom is a green inchworm with an orange tummy. The upper half of his body is upright. He has wide open eyes looking away from Duke and six little legs. The top two legs are waving around and his mouth is open in a gasp. There are a few flowers in the grass, but they're falling over and wilted looking. On a blue sky background is the book's title, Farts Make Noise. Now, one thing to know about this book, all the dogs in the book look like dogs, but they act like people, which means they stand on their back legs, they wear clothes, and they speak English or they sign in ASL. So flipping to page one, Duke sits at the kitchen table eating breakfast in the morning from a bowl of cereal. There's a cereal box on the table along with his plate with toast and an apple. He's reading the back of the cereal box while he eats breakfast. On the wall behind him, there's a window. Outside is a tree with a couple of little doves nestled into a tree branch. On the windowsill is his little worm friend laying on the windowsill, kind of looking bored. The ASL photo on the page is of Amy doing the sign for morning. And the words say, "In the morning, I ate my cereal." Next page has two small pictures. One is Duke finishing his cereal and he's scraping the spoon on the bottom of the bowl. Next to him, his mother says, "Scoop your cereal without scraping the bowl. Banging on the dishes is loud." In the next scene, Duke puts the silverware into the dishwasher. The photo on this page is the sign for school. It says, "I helped my mom do chores before school." Except If you look at the picture, Duke just drops his stuff into the dishwasher. His mom stands nearby and she grimaces. Mom said, "Be gentle. Dropping forks and spoons is loud." The next page, Duke is in school. On the left side, there's a classroom with two long tables. Four dogs sit in each row, and each dog has a piece of paper and some colors in front of them. The dogs are different colors and breeds, like a poodle, a Boston Terrier, and a beagle. Standing in front of the class is his tall teacher, who's a yellow lab. The teacher wears a tie and glasses, and he's giving them directions for what to write on their paper. Some of the students watch the teacher, and some look around. Duke's elbow rests on the table, and he's looking off to the side and tapping his crayon on the table. He looks bored. It says, "My teacher was talking during pre-K. I felt fidgety." The next page shows the teacher near Duke's seat. His hand rests over Duke's hand, and the teacher says, "Please stop tapping your crayons. Repeating noises bother people." On the back of Duke's chair, we see the inchworm standing near Duke's shoulder, watching the teacher scold him. The photo on the page shows the sign for bother. Next is still in the classroom, but on the back wall, a fire alarm is ringing. The light is blinking, and there's lines around the alarm to show that it's beeping. It says our school had a fire drill. The teacher holds a clipboard. Some of the kids have their hands over their ears or their eyes are squinted up because it's very loud. Duke's eyes are really wide, so it must be loud enough that he can hear too. The sign on the page is for fire alarm. The next page says the alarm beeped, the light flashed, and we moved quickly. Fire alarms are very loud. The drawing shows a line of six dogs walking out of the classroom. Some of them are serious. One has his paws plugging his ears. There's a poodle with little yellow bows in her hair who walks on her tippy toes, and there's a couple of yellow labs. They file down the hallway to go outside for the fire drill. Next, we're in the hallway again, but the dogs are walking back into the classroom. The teacher stands next to the door, checking names off his list on his clipboard. A little chihuahua waves hello to the teacher. A bulldog is next, and then lastly, Duke is just smiling. The next page says, "When we walked back to the classroom, my teacher said, 'Pick up your feet when you walk. Your feet make noise shuffling on the floor.'" The teacher in the picture shows Duke how to pick up his feet while he walks. If we go back to the previous page, we now notice that Duke was dragging his feet on the ground as he walked. Next, Duke, his two brothers, and his mom walk down the sidewalk with grass on either side. It says, "We walked my brothers home from school." Duke's brother shows him a school paper, and Duke signs good. His oldest brother wears glasses, and they both have backpacks. Mom is last in line, wearing a purple dress with hands in her pockets. Next to the older brother, we see a butterfly. And then on the corner by the grass are pink flowers with some bees on the flowers. It says bees buzz, but they are quiet. The next page shows two butterflies and one of them lands on Duke's nose. Duke asks, "What noise do butterflies make?" His mom says, "Butterflies don't make any noise." There's a smaller drawing showing Duke holding the butterfly gently in the palm of his hand, and they're all looking at the butterfly. Next, they're walking up the front stairs to go inside their house. Mom stands on the top step and she has the door open. The oldest brother walks next to Duke and his face is all squinched up like yuck. The brother behind him points and laughs. The words say, "My brother said, 'Oh, you farted.' Mom said, 'Say, excuse me.'" Duke's foot is on the step and his teeth are kind of clenched a little bit. We see a green cloud coming from the back under his tail. On the ground, his little worm friend looks like he got too close to the green cloud. His eyebrows are up and his hands are in the air. He's trying to wave away the green cloud. Duke said, "Huh? It didn't stink. How did you know?" On that page, Amy makes the sign for stink, which is just holding your nose. That's how you do the ASL sign for stink. Duke's brother pats him on the back and says, "Farts make noise, bro." I said, "Oh, excuse me." Then I laughed too. Next, Duke crouches down in front of the oven. Inside the oven is a pizza baking. The words say, "At dinner time, the pizza in the oven smelled so good. I hadn't eaten since lunch." The photo shows the sign for smell. In a smaller drawing, his mom talks to Duke and asks, "Are you hungry?" Duke says, "Yes, how did you know?" Mom said, "I heard your tummy growl." Next page, Duke stands alone and puts his hands on his kind of pudgy tummy. The worm is on Duke's shoulder with his eyebrows up in the air like, "Wow." The caption says, "I didn't know my tummy made noise." Now Duke's mom, dad, and his two brothers eat dinner at a round table with pizza, salad, and cups on the table. His middle brother's mouth is open and his eyes are slightly big. Next to him, mom has one hand on the side of her head. Her eyes are closed and she looks exasperated. The other brother is laughing. Underneath the table, the worm sits at a tiny table with a white tablecloth and a rose. Duke passes a lettuce piece down to the worm under the table. And the text says, "Dad told my brother, no burping at the dinner table. Say, excuse me." My brother said, "Excuse me." "I didn't hear him burp. It didn't bother me." The picture on the page shows this sign for excuse me. Next, they wait in line at the movie theater, giving their tickets to the usher. And there's a couple of movie posters on the wall. It says, "We went to a movie." The photo shows the sign for movie. The four dogs sit in movie theater seats facing the screen before the movie starts. On the big screen, there's a box of popcorn, a hot dog, and a drink dancing and singing. Duke's brothers talk before the movie starts. It says, "During a movie, my brothers whispered. When I was little, I thought whispers were just moving your mouth. Whispers make noise, but they are quieter than indoor voices." Then we see them on the front, from the front, sitting at the movie. Each one is holding some food. There's red licorice. Duke holds a bag of candy, and his brother has a box of popcorn. Duke's dad has his finger up to his lips like, "Shh." The sign on the page shows the sign for careful. The words say, "Dad signed and whispered, wrappers make noise. We opened them carefully." Next, while everyone's watching the movie, Duke signs "Wow" to his brother, and his brother signs "Yes." And the text at the bottom says, "Sign language doesn't make noise. It doesn't bother anyone." Next, all four dogs are in the car in a parking lot. It's raining and puddles form in the parking lot of the movie theater. Dad has his hands on the steering wheel and everyone looks out the car windows at the rain. The words say, when Dad drove home, it rained. Hard rain makes a tapping noise. In the back seat, Duke and his brother have big eyes. Duke looks startled, and in the back window, a big lightning bolt flashes. The words say, "Lightning flashed a bright light in the sky. I felt a big kaboom." The photo shows the sign for lightning. Next is a side view of them driving while the rain falls hard on the car. Duke asks his brother, "What noise does lightning make?" His brother says, "Lightning is quiet, but thunder is loud when it is close." The photo shows the sign for quiet. The last page shows Duke lying in his bed. His head is on the pillow and his eyes are closed. A teddy bear is tucked under his arm. On the night table next to the bed, Duke's hearing aid sits in a box. The worm has his own little bed made from matchsticks. His pillow is over his ears. Outside the window, we see a backyard tree and some grass. It's still raining, and there's a big lightning strike in the distance. The words on the page say, "Thunderstorms don't bother me. Do any noises bother you?" And that's the end of the story part. And the cool thing about, one of the cool things about the Duke books is that after the story, there's resources for teachers and caregivers about deaf culture and etiquette. Several of my deaf friends also shared their experiences about things that made noise that they didn't know until someone told them. And I want to share a few of those things with you. So now, if you've ever hung around with deaf people, you probably saw some of these rules for deaf, or you probably know about some of these rules for etiquette in deaf communities. If you're with a group of deaf people and they want to get someone's attention across the room, a lot of times they'll flash the lights off and on a couple times to get people's attention. Or sometimes they stomp on the floor a couple of times, or they'll even pound on the table a couple of times to get the person's attention across the floor. So we have a list of do's and don'ts. A couple of the don'ts are don't stomp too many times. Don't throw things at people, like you don't throw cups or pencils to try to get someone's attention. And you don't turn the lights off and on a bunch of times, or just turn them off. Another thing people don't think about is if you stand in front of a bright light or a window and you try to sign, no one can see the signing because the light makes your body look black and you can't see the signing in front. So that's another deaf etiquette thing. And one more thing that Amy mentioned in her article about etiquette is that deaf children and adults need to feel safe and comfortable at home and in school. That's a deaf community. So when they go out to, you know, hang out with other deaf people, or if they're in school or social things, you shouldn't scold or tell children to be quiet when they use their voices because they're signing, or if they make noises that are louder than people in public, because those are safe spaces. Now, kids do need to learn what things make noise, and they do need to learn how to be polite, but you also have to think about like where it is. So if it's out in public, then it's good to teach deaf kids or hard of hearing kids how to act. But if it's in a safe space, then people shouldn't scold them for that. The last thing I want to share with you is just a few of the stories from my deaf friends, because these are awesome. One friend of mine, his name is Robert. Every morning he would arrive at work and he would drop his vehicle keys on his desk. He never thought about it once. It was just his habit. And one morning, a guy stopped in his office right after he arrived at work. And he asked his coworker, "How did you know I just got here?" And the coworker said, "When you drop your keys on the desk, we can hear you." And from then on, Robert comes into the office and he gently sets his keys on his desk because he doesn't want the whole office to know that he has arrived. A second story, this one's hilarious. This is my friend Ryan. He says that he was a beta tester for a company testing wristbands that vibrated when the wristband detected a sound. So depending on the sound's frequency, the wristband would vibrate more or less. And he would know noises like running water or a dog barking, loud things like that. What he did not know was that when Ryan peed in the toilet, if he peed right into the water of the toilet, his wristband started going off, like vibrating really loud to tell him that that noise was loud. So he decided to move a little bit so that when he peed, it landed against the side of the toilet away from the water. And then his wristband stopped vibrating. And so he thought, "Oh my goodness, I'm 30 years old. And I just found out that peeing in public makes noise." So he thought about all the times before that he had peed in public and what were people thinking that he was so loud. That was funny. Another friend of mine, her name's Gina, and she told me that when her son was younger, he would keep saying, "The car is clicking." And Gina didn't know what he was talking about. She was worried that something was wrong with her car. until later she realized that the left and right blinkers made noise too. She didn't know that. I think that's all the stories that are in there from my deaf friends. And so that is the end of Farts Make Noise. But if anybody has any questions or wants to ask anything, let's do that.
All right, so let's have, is it Desi?
Desi,
So could you see if there are any hands raised?
There are no raised hands at this moment.
I have a quick comment. This is Rob. Yeah, I just remember it was kind of funny. I had gone to a CSUN conference, in fact, and I didn't realize it, but I had this really huge yawn and I didn't cover my mouth. And somebody from across the room said, "Rob, you're yawning, and you really, that's not quite right." And so it's just like one of those, it kind of reminds me of that situation with the deaf, where you don't necessarily think about the visual aspect of it.
Exactly. I think it's exactly the same thing. That's great. That's a perfect example of like you're just living your life, not realizing that other people might have a judgment about something that you're doing. So that's a
Yeah.
perfect example.
Thank you.
Just a moment. We do have a hand. Nicolette, let me just. There you are. You're allowed to talk.
Hi, you can call me Nikki. This has been wonderful. This has been wonderful. I do a group called Storytime on Well Connected, which is another organization for elderly folks, blind and sighted, well, as is CCB and ACB. And so we have a story hour a couple of times a week. And because my voice kind of gives out when I first started doing this, I got other people to join in and read what they've written or read stories that they enjoy. And it's my favorite program. I facilitate several of them. But in Well Connected, we also do an anthology because we have a writer's group. So if anybody reads anything during that group, they get a chance to have it in the anthology. And it hasn't been printed elsewhere, but it is sent to all the members of the Well Connected. And it's done rather simply. And that's something we could perhaps start out doing. We don't necessarily have to have it published, but we could send it by email. They used to send it in a folder, but it got too expensive. So now they email everything. And so that works really well. And in terms of the ASL, my daughter, who's now 45, but she was working at John Muir Hospital in Concord. And she decided that she was going to learn it because there were a lot of deaf patients coming in, and she worked in the dispatching office. And I think that there are definitely some schools in this country who are teaching it, but I think it should be more. And also, I've been volunteering with blind organizations for many, many years, and I took my granddaughter when she was in third grade with a bunch of people from the Lighthouse in San Francisco to her school. And they divided up three third grade classes into two classrooms. And we had two guide dogs, and we even had a singer. And so when we went in, the principal said, because I was very active in school, the principal said, "Well, they'll probably last for about 20 minutes." Well, an hour and a half later, we were still going strong. And I tried to get the Lighthouse to continue that, but it just didn't work when the person who was running those activities was let loose when we had a new CEO. It wasn't possible to do that anymore. But we do have a wonderful, wonderful person in CCB San Francisco, Ellie, and she works in the school and she's doing an amazing job. But I think that we should, what that's one of the things that we should push for is having information in the early grades. Because when the kids were asking all these questions, they weren't being nasty, they weren't being rude, they were curious, they wanted to know. And they were fascinated. And I think that if we started with the young people, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems that we have right now, because one of my friends regularly gets beaten up on Market Street and has her cane taken away from her because she's tiny. And that kind of stuff is just inexcusable. And I don't know whether learning earlier would help much, but I just think that we need a lot more education in the fields that we're dealing with, blindness and deafness, absolutely. So thank you very much. Sorry I went on.
No, thank you. Thank you, Nikki. And I couldn't agree. I mean, 100%. I think that young children are fascinated by things that they don't know about, and they just want to learn more about how people get around and how people do things. And, you know, that curiosity, once they have the information from a real person who experiences it, you know, I think it develops understanding and empathy and experience. I think sometimes people act in negative ways because of fear and ignorance. And so if we can start from a young age exposing children, you know, a lot of children are mainstreamed nowadays. And so the other children are exposed to different types of, you know, behaviors and disabilities and all kinds of things now. And so why not have, you know, blindness or deafness or braille or cane travel, like why not have those be or service animals? That's a great idea. I would love to see more of that in the schools.
All right. Next we have call in user one.
Hi, my name is Christine Bailey. I'm in Riverside, California. Riverside, California has a deaf school. My granddaughter, half brother, is deaf. And so she's learned to do sign language to communicate with him through the deaf school and stuff. So she, at the age of 17, was working at Taco Bell. And the lady was deaf and didn't know what was going on. My granddaughter started signing to her, and she was shocked she knew how to sign. At the end of the order, she ended up putting a $5 tip on the counter telling her for signing her order to her.
Exactly. Like you folks know what it's like to go out into the world and have people, you know, react negatively or not know what to do or what to say and be worried about doing the wrong thing. And that happens to deaf people all the time too. You know, a lot of deaf people don't think of themselves as disabled. They just think there's a communication barrier. Like you speak one language, we speak a different language. And so it's breaking down those communication barriers. I think if more people just knew a few signs and weren't afraid to use them, I think that's wonderful. And yeah, deaf people are loyal. So if they know a restaurant has people who can sign or a business has people who can sign, they will go there because they know that they'll be treated well. So that's cool. That's a great story.
Yeah. And also the Murray's Calendars here in Riverside hires the deaf school in their kitchen to work in their kitchen to learn culinary skills.
That's a good idea too. You know, I've actually, I was just reading online last week about a few restaurants who have hired deaf servers. And what they do is the server walks around with either the menu, if you're doing like pencil and paper, and it's the menu has like laminated on it and like a marker, or if it's more of an electronic place, they walk around with like an iPad with the menu on it. And then they go around to the people at the table, and the people at the table just like circle what they want on the menu. And then the deaf person goes back and takes the order and everything. And so there's more restaurants that are hiring deaf servers. And really, if you stop and think about it, it's not really that hard to make accommodations for the communication barrier. So I think, you know, while it's great to employ people in the kitchen, it's also cool to employ people, like, if they want to be a waitress or a waiter, like, cool.
Kelly, it's Linda. Of course, then if a blind person comes into the restaurant and needs to choose their meal, there's a little bit of a challenge there. I wanted to
ask, but you know what? The blind people, if you guys learned a few signs, you could do the finger spelling in the hand, and then that would work. See? Yeah, I would still learn.
So I want to ask you a question. We know that the movie Coda won the Oscar, and there's a lot of talk about having disabled actors and, you know, directors and so forth being involved in the movie and TV industry. And tell me what you think about whether deaf people in some ways have a a leg up on that issue as opposed to blind people in terms of being accepted as potential involved in the movie industry?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'm friends with a couple of people who have been in some like videos and commercials, and I follow some of those deaf actors and actresses on social media. So I kind of see their more personal posts. And I think that they have worked really hard for a very long time. Like if you look at Marlee Matlin, she won the Academy Award. I mean, gosh, what was that, 25 years ago?
No, it's over 30 years.
Yeah.
It was a movie my husband and I saw on our first date. So that was like 1988.
So you remember it well. Exactly. Totally. So that was a really long time from 1988 all the way until this year when they recognized A Deaf Gentleman and then the movie itself. And it took that long. And honestly, I feel like the deaf actors and actresses have been working so hard for so many years just to try to prove to people that they can do it and that the only barrier is the language barrier, like that there's no other barrier besides the language. So in some ways, I think they do have a leg up in that. I think the greater community, for whatever reason, thinks like ASL is cool. Like, I can't tell you, I'm an ASL interpreter. I can't tell you how many times people come up to me and I know that they mean well, but if I had a nickel for every time somebody said, oh, sign language is so pretty, I just love watching you. And it's like, okay, I'm not up here doing this for your entertainment, but thanks. I understand that you mean well. So I think in that way, like, people are fascinated by it. But I also think in a way that blind folks have a leg up in that you already speak English. Like you don't have a communication barrier. You just have maybe, people are judging that you can't do something. And so I think if people who want to act and want to be involved in that would like just advocate and like try to get in there, I feel like now like the deaf folks have like broken the door down, like, hey, we're here and we're talented and we can do this. And obviously you can see that this movie was a great movie and people enjoyed it because people got to see this glimpse into this life that they didn't know about. And so obviously your stories are glimpses into lives that people are going to find interesting and people don't know about. And Hollywood is famous for, being fascinated by the unknown, you know, learning more about something that they didn't know about. So I hope that this, that CODA winning the award kind of breaks down the walls so that more movies like that will get made. I think that would be really cool. I would go see a movie about, a school for the blind or just a guy at work who happens to be blind. Like, I would totally go see that movie.
I got one. Okay, it's Sarah. So, no, the real blind people of CCB, right? Now they're like, right. The real house.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, reality show.
I had somebody go, you know, this is Sarah Harris. She's a professional blind person. I'm like, what does that mean?
Oh my gosh, Sarah, that is awesome. I love that. She's a professional blind person.
I'm a professional blind person. I don't just play one on TV, folks. Yay.
Oh my gosh. That is so, you know, the stuff people say, right?
That's awesome. We do have a few more hands.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to take Judy Wilkinson next, and then Charlene, you'll be right after her.
Well, I think I'm unmuted.
You are.
Like maybe somebody in our audience. Well, I got to tell you one of the funniest stories. I've talked to a lot of kids over the years in schools, and I was in the UK one time with a group of kids. First of all, you know, I kept telling them they didn't have to call me Miss, and I said, "Oh, you don't have to call me." You know, they always call their teachers Miss or Sir, so they used to anyway. So I'd say, "You don't have to call me Miss," and they'd say, "Oh, thank you, Miss." But anyway, the question the girls asked me was, I have pierced ears. How do you know how to put in your earring? Was one of the funniest questions I ever got. But in all seriousness, I know Connie Bateman talked to us in the Kahlua group about how she managed a class in ASL. So I actually am wondering, how can we blind folks learn ASL?
Thank you, Judy. Thank you. I think, obviously, I think that people should learn ASL from deaf people because they're the experts. I've been doing this for 30 years and I am not, I mean, I'm a fluent signer and I can translate between the two languages, but I always send people to a place that has a deaf teacher. And, you know, there's a lot of folks within the deaf community who also experience vision problems and to various degrees. And so they're super familiar with, you know, do you need to just sit close? Do I need to sign in a smaller space? Do I need hand over hand? And so I think negotiating with an instructor of like, do you need one-on-one or can you sit in a class with everyone else as long as you're positioned correctly? So, you know, there's such a wide variety of vision abilities. So I think working with the instructor to figure out if it needs to be a one-on-one situation or if you can actually be in a class, I think they would welcome you.
All right, next, Charlene.
Yes, I was going to mention that there's actually a deaf-blind sign language. I learned it quite a few years ago, unfortunately. I have now forgotten it, but I was at a camp in Arizona. And counselors, there was two gentlemen, both of them were totally deaf, totally blind and very, and almost totally deaf. And the counselors would talk to them, but I thought, you know, they're probably figuring that those guys have to talk to them. I bet they'd like somebody who would just walk up and talk to them. So that's what I started doing is I learned some signs. And so I could not do full conversations, but I certainly could communicate with them. I could, you know, ask them how they are. I could see if they needed something. I got them to know me because I had a guide dog and I would, you know, take their hand and put it on my dog's head so that they knew who they were talking to. But that is something to learn because the sign language for the deafblind, at least at that time, was not the same as a sign language for the sighted. It was special, so you could do it right inside the hands of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be learned by, that would be something good to be learned by people also, and especially in our group, because we have several deafblind individuals. And with a lot of people who have RP have the Usher syndrome, which takes away their hearing.
Right. Yeah. It's more common than people think. And I think the thing that's really different about the tactile sign language is you're still doing it. You're just trying to make it so that it's accessible to the person's hand who's like on top of your hand. So when you make like your letters and your signs, you have to be kind of conscious of is it something that can be felt instead of just movement that doesn't mean anything. And there's also a thing called pro-tactile sign language where it actually involves like two people or one person. So it's like you sit close and then you kind of touch a person's like leg or shoulder. And sometimes like I've done it with presenters who are deafblind and we use two interpreters. So one interpreter is interpreting for the audience, like the questions. And then there's another interpreter standing behind the deafblind individual. And we do a series of like taps and on their shoulder and on their back with our fingers. Like we might like draw our hands down or we draw like what the room looks like with our finger on the person's back. So if it's like a square room, I'll draw a square on the person's back. And then I'll say like where the people are. And then if a bunch of people like laugh, I'll make these, I'll like tap gently on their back with all my fingers to show that people are laughing. Or if someone raises a hand, I take a finger and I put it in the middle of their back and then I go up to their shoulder so that they know that someone in the audience is raising their hand. And then that person who's speaking can like handle the audience well because he knows what the people's reactions are since he can't see them. So yeah, it's super cool. It's super fascinating. And once you get into it, it's there's a lot to learn, but I definitely think, yeah, cooperating back and forth is awesome.
All right. And next we have Karen.
Hi, Karen Trotter, Kelly and Linda and everybody. This has been a fabulous afternoon. What fun. Kelly, thank you for letting me reminisce. I used to teach deafblind individuals and I miss it like crazy. And I didn't really realize that till today. kind of just to touch on Judy's question, I took college courses taught by a deaf instructor. And then I had people in the advanced classes who did hands-on hand and copied and mirrored what the teacher was doing. And it was great. I mean, that's the way to learn is through with a deaf individual. And one of my closest friends is deafblind, and we've just had the most fabulous times. And I have to mention really quickly, your little fart book is amazing. But during that class, I remember distinctly, we had a guest presenter who was deaf. And from the back of the class all the way to the front of the class, she was farting all the way up the aisle and making noise. And she didn't know it, of course. So we're all trying to be really, really serious and not let her know that we're just wanting to crack up. And, oh, I will never forget that. It was a good story.
Oh, that's awesome. I hope somebody told her eventually.
I hope so, but it wasn't in my place to do so.
It's kind of like when you have food in your teeth, you know, yeah. And you like really hope that someone tells you that you have broccoli in your tooth. You know, it's the same thing, right? Like if I'm walking up to the front of the class farting all the way, I kind of want to know.
I hope the instructor told her. Anyway, I just had to say
that's a great story too.
Ending in 548.
Hi, this is Karen Pology from the San Gabriel Valley chapter. I have just a couple of real quick things. First of all, as far as having a leg up, I'm not sure if the hearing impaired or the visually impaired do, because I know you guys may have experienced this too, where you go into a restaurant or into a clothing store with a sighted companion, and the first thing that the server or the attendant would say is, what does she want? Or what is she looking for? So I've always told my friends this quick story to help them to understand all they need to say is, I don't know, you'll have to ask her. But I went to a high school football game with my brother years ago and my sister-in-law, and we went to a restaurant down there, and all I was eating was a hamburger, so it wasn't anything difficult. But this other couple was staring at me, and it made my brother angry. He, of course, was sighted. So he got a bunch of food in his mouth and went over to them and said, here, you want to see what I'm eating? This is what I'm eating. Because he was upset. And and I didn't have any idea they were staring, but he wasn't going to put up with it. But the other thing is, as far as sign language, and Christy Crispin could comment on this, is Christy and another set of twins that we all knew were friends with a little guy, God rest his soul, and he was deafblind. They used to use sign language. They used the Braille on the hand and just drew the Braille letters on the hand, and that's how they communicated. And I never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I always found that very interesting too. And I thank you for your time, and everything was very wonderful. And hi, Linda Farrell.
Hi, Pam.
Thank you, Pam.
Okay, next we have David Jackson.
Hello, Kelly. Hello, everybody. This has been a really fascinating afternoon. I'm really grateful I was able to break away from doing my studies to take in this wonderful presentation. So I'm hard of hearing as well as very extremely low vision now. And because of the hard of hearing issue, I've learned a little bit of fingerspelling and have had that opportunity to have help from somebody who is deaf and who has taught me. One of the techniques that I've learned, if my fingerspelling isn't working out, I'll take a pen and I'll take the person's palm and I will use the pen and spell out the letter on their palm. So for example, how are you doing? I'll write H-O-W-A-R-E Y-O-U doing with the question mark, and they'll get, they understand it. The person understands it. So in that instance, I'm able to communicate with somebody. I just wanted to pass that along.
Thank you, David. That's a great accommodation. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I'm sure that deaf people would understand that as well. And that's a great, like, creative way to do it for sure.
Okay, and then our last hand for right now is Nikki. You may go ahead.
Thank you. Well, this kind of goes along with David's story, because we had a wonderful, wonderful, very, very tiny little old lady who was at the lighthouse, and she was deaf and blind. And most people ignored her because they didn't know sign language and they didn't know how to approach her. But I think the first or second day that I met her, I asked her caretaker, I said, "How can I talk to her? I said, I don't know sign language." And she said, "Well, you know how to spell, right?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Okay." So she told her to turn her hand over. So she had her hand palm up. And she said, "Just spell the words." And I did. So I was able to have an immediate conversation with her. It took a long time, but it was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. And I sat there and the tears were streaming down my face because I was able to talk to her. But I realized that, you know, other people were afraid. So I was telling everybody, just go sit with her and spell, you know, Victoria will help you. And so it got a lot of people over there talking to her, and she had the most wonderful smile, the most wonderful laugh. And Victoria told me a couple of weeks later, she says, "You just don't know what you've done." She said, "It's so wonderful," because she's been so happy. And she said, "And I never even thought about doing that. And I'm not scared of her." So, but it was amazing, the instant communication. Wow. But she did also know sign language, even though she had learned it like Helen Keller did when she was quite young. Mm-hmm. So thank you. And this has been a wonderful, wonderful program. I think I'm supposed to be taking notes, but I've been so engrossed that I haven't taken a single note. But I did take photographs of all of the pages of your book, and I'm going to read them to my grandson, who is almost 4 years old.
Thank you. The book is also available on Bookshare. So if you want to get it from there, you should be able to.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That.
Thank you for your story. That was a great story.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Do we have time for one more hand?
Is there one more?
Yes.
Charlene? All right, we'll take one more, and then we need to wrap it up.
Okay, Charlene, go ahead.
I have to tell you a story about a gentleman that I met at an ACB convention in Phoenix. He was so fascinating. He could speak, though he could not hear. He learned to speak when he was younger. He spoke four different languages, and you would hand signed the letters into his hand, and he would like kind of shake his hand when he picked up on the word, and he could pick up on words within a couple of letters. He was fascinating to work with.
That is fascinating. That's quite an accomplishment. Wow.
Well, Kelly, at the end of another wonderful time, thank you for coming in and reading and sharing your writing experiences as well. I think the conversations this afternoon were incredibly energizing for our group, and we can look forward to some wonderful writing coming up. And heaven knows we'll be back in touch with you for more advice on how to proceed.
Oh, I'd be happy to help anybody who has any questions. I think I mentioned this last time, but my website is just my name, kellybrockenhoff.com. Go ahead and, follow me. I have a newsletter that I send out every month. You can follow me on social media. I will be having another Kickstarter project coming up in July for my next Duke the Deaf Dog book. And I would love your support. That would be awesome. And the anthology idea, I think, would be a great Kickstarter project. So if you guys actually put that together, make sure somebody contacts me. I would love to help you get that project going on Kickstarter. I think it would be an excellent project there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So everybody, Lisa. Let's close that with a door press.
Sure, I can do that. Let's get the wheel going here. So this was provided by IDC, $25 Amazon gift card. Let's spin. And the winner is Dirk Nahart. Congratulations, Dirk.
Woohoo! I know that guy.
Yeah, me too.
Yay for you, Dirk.
All right. So any announcements about tonight? I am so looking forward to the banquet. Larry's a fabulous MC. We have great awards to give out. And once again, we have the magnificent Jason Castanguay coming to play for us this evening. So let's get our beverages of choice, our food ready, and be back at 6 for the banquet.
And our dancing shoes are no shoes because we're at home and we don't have to wear shoes if we don't want to.
No, we don't. We can make noise or not make noise, either way.
That's true. And let your hair down or put it up. Oh, thank you, Miss Linda. You're such a wonderful MC over here yourself.
Recording stopped.
I had fun. You give me the fun part. I appreciate that.
Oh, so of course.
We'll be back later.